This podcast is from Christian Chapel in Tulsa, Oklahoma. For more information, visit us online at christianchapel.com.
Hey, my name is Chris. I'm the pastor here at Christian Chapel. We're thrilled that you're here today in person or online or maybe listening later. You're joining us as we're wrapping up a message series. We've worked our way through 1 Peter. It's a letter written by the Apostle Peter to a group of churches in modern-day Turkey. He writes in the early to mid-60s A.D., the church is beginning to experience the first waves of persecution under the Roman Emperor Nero. And Peter's writing just to remind them, you can persevere because you've been chosen to follow Jesus at this time, in this place, among these people, under these circumstances. You don't have to give up. You don't have to run away. You don't have to think you've done something wrong, but you can just keep being faithful to Jesus because he is going to be faithful to you right where you are. So all summer long, we've been just looking at that and saying, what did Peter say there? And then also asking, what does it mean for us here? Now today we're going to be in 1 Peter chapter 5, the first four verses of the chapter, and we're going to see what he teaches us about leading well. Now Peter's instruction in the passage we're looking at this morning is primarily geared towards leaders in a local church context. So I guess in some way inviting you to perform a job evaluation on me and our other staff pastors this morning, and you'll have some standards here that you can see if we're lining up with or not. But I also want to encourage you today that though his primary application is for local church leaders, first of all, that's going to include more than just our pastors and more than our deacons, but is actually going to wind up incorporating many of you when we see who Peter's talking to. And then secondly, I would encourage you that even though the primary application is local church leadership, there are principles that are being presented to us here by Peter that are going to apply to any area of life where you have leadership responsibility. Now, I know for some of us, we already kind of exempt ourselves from that, and you're saying, oh, no, I don't lead. I don't have the titles, I don't have the responsibilities, but we're just going to do a quick leadership survey here to start to try to figure out who all this might apply to. So if in the last week you told someone to do something, please raise your hand. Okay, if in the last week you told someone to do something and they did it, please raise your hand. So most of the parents of young children did not raise their hand. They're like, I tried the first one, the second one we're still working on. If in the last week somebody asked you for help with a project or your advice on a problem, raise your hand. If in the last week you were held accountable for the actions of someone else, raise your hand. If in the last week you held someone accountable for their own actions, raise your hand. If you fired some, no, just kidding, we won't make you. Some of you are like, yep, but no, we won't do that. If in the last week you presented a plan, a project to a group of people, maybe it was at school, at work, maybe it was your family, at church, a volunteer organization, a neighborhood, a team, if in any space you said, here's an idea and I need you to help me accomplish it, if you did that in any capacity last week, raise your hand. Okay, so what I want you to notice is we didn't ask about your titles. We're not asking about, hey, are you the boss? Are you the manager? Are you the supervisor? Are you the parent? Are you the president? Are you on the board? Are you in charge? None of that, because what we want to understand this morning is that leadership is influence, right? It often comes with a title, but there are many times you lead without any formal titles at all. So what I want to encourage you with this morning is that the lessons we're going to learn from 1 Peter, first, we're going to apply them here in our local church context, but they're also going to overflow into every other area of life where God has entrusted us with influence. So if you have a Bible, 1 Peter chapter 5, we're going to start in verse 1. If not, it'll be here on the screens for you. Peter writes, "To the elders among you, I appeal as a fellow elder and a witness of Christ's sufferings, who will also share in the glory to be revealed. Be shepherds of God's flock that is under your care, watching over them, not because you must, but because you are willing, as God wants you to be, not pursuing dishonest gain, but eager to serve, not lording it over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that will never fade away. So Peter starts, first of all, by talking to the elders among you, which should cause us to stop and ask, first of all, what is an elder? And secondly, who are the elders among us this morning? Right? Who is Peter primarily speaking to? Now, an elder in different churches, you're going to get different answers. If they do this, they do that. At its simplest level, and the easiest way for us to understand this morning, is when Peter talks about elders in the local church, he's referring to anyone that carries some form of spiritual authority, responsibility, or oversight for the care of those that God has placed under their leadership. Okay, so obviously then that includes local church pastors. It obviously would include, you know, in a Christian chapel type setting, our board of deacons and our staff pastors. But I think we can push a little bit farther. And to do that, we need to remember that the setting to which Peter originally writes. He's writing to a collection of house churches that are spread all over Turkey. And his assumption is that in each church, there are elders who are leading those congregations. So Peter reminds us that leadership is part of God's plan for the local church. Now, there is a certain nostalgia that I think some Christians feel at times of, man, if we could just get back to an early church, house church type experience, we could get rid of all of the problems the church has today, right? I mean, and you'll hear it phrased in different ways. If we could just get back to before the pastors ruined it all, if we could get back before there were boards. If we could get back before there was all of this structure, before there were buildings, before there were all these things. But what I want you to understand this morning is no matter how far you go back, no matter how small the group of believers becomes, God always has an expectation that there will be a leader or leaders in that group. We don't know the sizes of the churches that Peter is writing to, but we can safely assume some of them are fairly small. And yet he speaks as if each local congregation has elders. To the elders among you. He expects that they are there. He doesn't tell us how they got there. Some of them are probably elders because they got there first. Right? They were the church planters. They were the first Christians in their city. And so just because they'd been there longer, they were the ones that people would look to. There are probably other congregations where they might have been chosen or asked to serve as others recognize the gifts and the abilities that God had given them. But Peter's making it clear to us leadership is part of God's plan for the local church. Good leadership will further the mission of Christ in the local church. Bad leadership will harm the mission of Christ in the local church. And so for all of us, then, we have to first ask, okay, if an elder is somebody who carries spiritual responsibility and authority, am I then serving in any kind of eldership role in the local church? So again, let's just take our context. We could all probably easily say that, yes, Chris, you and the other pastors serve in that role, and I would agree with you. You could say our board of deacons serves in that role, and I would agree with you. And then for some of you would say, and that's where it stops. This applies to you guys, and we're going to sit out here and judge if you're doing it right. So I want to invite you into the judgment seat with me, though, this morning, okay? So I'm going to push on you a little bit and say if it's people with spiritual authority and responsibility, then in a Christian chapel context, the application of 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 through 4, is also going to include our home group leaders. It's going to include our chapel youth leaders. It's going to include our chapel kids leaders. It's going to include our Royal Family Kids mentors. It's going to include our crisis pregnancy outreach leadership team, our Royal Family leadership team. It's going to include everyone who has some form of spiritual authority or responsibility over others and for others through the ministries of Christian Chapel. So as we cast our net a little bit broader, now more of us are coming in. Now there's a hesitancy at times of, hey, I don't want that title. And the reason we don't want that title is because we have generally learned that the more responsibility you have, the more of your rights and privileges you have to forfeit. One of the guys who's helped mentor me as a pastor emphasizes this over and over and over again of, Chris, the more God trusts you with, the more you have to be willing to give up in order to exercise that trust in an effective way. That it's not about, hey, the higher you climb or the more power you receive, the more you get to do what you want. But he's saying, no. The more you have, the more you have to be willing to sacrifice, to give, to lay down. And so for some of us, we're like, I don't want that problem. I don't want that hassle. I don't want that headache. So I will be a home group servant. I'll be a chapel youth servant. I'll be a chapel kids worker. At Christian Chapel, we try to be strategic even in our language of saying, hey, will you be a D group leader for our chapel youth? Why? Because we want you to understand you're not just filling a role. You're stepping into a place of spiritual responsibility. When you teach these preschoolers on a Sunday morning, you're not just babysitting for 30 minutes or an hour, but you're stepping into a role of spiritual authority and responsibility as you begin to teach 3, 4, and 5-year-olds that God sees them and knows them and loves them and has a plan for them. When you say yes to being a home group leader, you're not just opening your home and kind of welcoming people in, serve them a meal, and pat them on the back, but you are stepping into a role of, I will rejoice with those who rejoice, and I will mourn with those who mourn. I will know you. I'll care about you. I'll be involved in your life. These are leadership roles. And so what Peter's trying to help us understand is that there will be, always will be, elders among you in the church, and there's some pretty specific instructions that you need to know. But before he gets there, he one more time kind of elevates that calling for us. He says, to the elders among you, I appeal as a fellow elder. You know, a lot of times we have a tendency to downplay the responsibility that we've been given. Like, oh yeah, I'm just a pastor of a local church. I'm just a home group leader. I'm just a small group leader. I just serve a couple times a month in Chapel Kids. It's not that big of a deal. There are other people who are more important. There are other people who have more influence. There are other people who have more responsibility. But listen to what Peter says. I appeal as a fellow elder and a witness of Christ's sufferings. We could all agree, I think, that Peter had an important job. He was a witness of who Jesus was, his life, death, and resurrection. He heard the teachings. He was passing them on to us. He was a leader in the church. And now he appeals to small church leaders in house church context and says, I'm an elder like you. And in doing so, he's not lowering himself down, but he is raising us up, trying to help us understand what God has called you to do and the authority he has entrusted to you is just as important as the job he gave to Peter. So you need to elevate your calling. You're not just teaching kids. You're not just opening your home. You are part of God's love and care for people that he loves and cares about. So we don't just get to passively be like, you know what, I'll do it. I might not do it well, but that's all right. No one else would, so I'll do it. Like, I might not teach those kids well, but I'll fill a spot. I'll be a warm body. Peter's trying to help us understand, no. When you are called to lead in the local church, take your calling seriously. Now, again, these things are going to apply outside of the local church. So if he's called you to lead in business, if he's called you to lead in your home, if he's called you to lead in the world of education, wherever it is, you need to elevate your calling. And you need to understand, you're not just going to kind of float through life, but you're going to really pay attention and lock into what is his purpose, what is his plan for me at this place in this time. Now, Peter then starts to go into some language to help us understand, if that's what an elder is, then what does an elder do? He uses the analogy of a shepherd. He says, be shepherds of God's flock that is under your care, watching over them. Now, for Peter's original audience, that's kind of a like, oh, okay. I've got that. Be a shepherd. For you and I, for the most part, we don't understand that. Right? As far as I know, no one checked their sheep before they came to church this morning, did they? Nope. I mean, some of you maybe. Anybody at any point in your life, have you had anything to do with sheep? Your wool coat you wear in the winter does not count. Okay, so some of us have, right? You've at least been around them a little bit. Now, to be a shepherd, there's a couple things that we want to remember here. First of all, he says, you're a shepherd of God's flock. So he's reminding us the sheep that you oversee, those that God has placed under your authority, before they were your children, before they were your employees, before they were members of your home group, before they were part of your church, before they were supporters in your ministry, they are and forever will be the sons and daughters of God just like you. So yeah, you might be leading them, but they don't belong to you. They belong to God. And so the job of a shepherd is to watch over the sheep for the benefit of the sheep and for the benefit of the owner. Right? So we're kind of removing ourselves, we're embracing the responsibility, but also kind of removing ourselves from the reward and saying, my primary job is to make sure the sheep are doing well for the sake of the owner of the sheep. Now that idea of be a shepherd, again, I just think we have to do a little bit of work. So my grandpa was a rancher out in western Oklahoma. And so there's a way you care for cattle, and then there's a way that a first century shepherd cared for sheep. So my grandpa had, you know, about maybe 200 head of cattle at different times. And caring for them meant he would get up in the morning and he would drive out, depending on the time of year. Sometimes he'd throw out hay, sometimes he would feed them grain. But he would always drive out in the morning, check, make sure they were all there. And then in the evening, he would take another loop through his land and make sure they were all there again. But for that, through most of the day, he was working in his shop, he was working in his barn, he was working crops, he was doing all other sorts of things. Some of us, when it comes to eldership in the church and church leadership, we have a rancher mentality of like, hey, I'm going to make sure they're not dead. I'm going to make sure they have some food, and I'll be there if there's a big crisis. But otherwise, you know, we just kind of leave them to themselves. But Peter's saying, no. When you're called to local church leadership, you're called to be a shepherd. And a shepherd lives with their sheep. A rancher checks on them. A shepherd walks with them. So a shepherd knows their sheep. A shepherd protects their sheep, cares for them, leads them to food. It just does everything he needs to do. So to help us think about this, let's just put it really simply. Shepherds smell like sheep. Right? Now, I mean, think of that. If you've had little kids and it's the summer in Oklahoma and they come in after an hour outside, what's one of the first things you probably say to them? You guys smell like outside, which is a very nice parent way of saying, you stink. Get off the furniture, right? Go take a shower. Change your clothes. What Peter's trying to help us understand by using the analogy of a shepherd is if God has entrusted you with part of his flock to lead them, then he expects you to be with them. You need to know their names. You need to know their stories. You need to rejoice in their successes, and you need to mourn in their failures. You don't get to lead from a distance. So again, if we're thinking in a local church context, that means for me as a pastor, I have to do everything in my ability to know who you are. You can't just be a face in a seat on a Sunday morning. Now, the challenge for me is that as Christian Chapel grows, at a certain point, it becomes physically impossible for me to be that involved in every person's life. Right? And then that's where our staff pastors come in. And then that's where our board members come in. And that's where our home group leaders come in. And that's where our chapel youth leaders come in. And we're just constantly saying, okay, if this is our flock, then God has entrusted us to care for each other. But in every space, as a home group leader, you're not just saying, hey, come on over and we'll kind of get to know each other and then we'll do it all again next year. But we're making commitments to those in our home groups of, we want to know you. We want to know your story. We want to learn about the condition of your marriage. We want to know your children. We want to celebrate with you, right? Like your home group leader should be the space where you get to brag about your kids without worrying. It should also be the space where you get to cry about your kids without worrying. As a chapel youth leader, it's a space for you to know those kids that you're serving with. Again, you've got to know where they go to school. You've got to know who their siblings are. You've got to know who their parents are. You've got to know what's going on at their house. You've got to show up at their ball games. You've got to go to their plays and musicals. You've got to invest in their life. Why? Because God is trusting you as a shepherd in their life. And you can't shepherd from a distance. If you're only in a preschool room twice a month, God expects you to know the children that you have, to know their parents, to talk with Pastor Amy. Is there certain ways I can lead them? Is there certain ways I can guide them? Are there ways that I can help them to be all in? This is what Peter is trying to help us understand. If you're called to be an elder, it's not a call to elevate and detach yourself from those that you lead, but to get right down there in the middle of it. And sometimes you're going to lead from the front and say, hey, come follow me. And sometimes you're going to lead from the middle and say, come on, let's join arms and let's go. And sometimes you're going to lead from the back and say, y'all get moving. But you're always going to lead with them. Shepherds smell like sheep. And then Peter gives us four leadership commands as he finishes, basically saying, hey, if you've been called to be an elder, you've been called to be a shepherd, and this is what it actually looks like. Now, with each one of these commands, he's going to give us a negative statement, but he's going to follow it up with a positive statement. Don't do this, instead do this. So the first one is he tells us, not because you must but because you are willing. Reminding us that leadership is a calling, not an obligation. You should not be leading just because you have to. Now again, so if we don't understand shepherds, I think most of us at least would understand time clocks. Anyone ever had a job where you had to clock in and clock out? Right? And they would tell you, don't clock in, you don't get paid. So one of my first jobs, I worked at a hospital in Topeka, Kansas in high school, and I would serve meals to the patients. But what I learned the very first day was if you don't clock in, you don't get paid. And if you work after you clock out, you don't get paid. And so the two most important moments of the day for me as a 16-year-old whose only concern was to make as much of that $7 an hour as I could was I will never forget to clock in and I will never work after I clock out. So I would come in some mornings, they'd be like, hey, Chris, I'd be like, nope, can't help you yet. Got to clock in. Can you just grab that? Nope, I can't. I need the 10 cents. You're robbing me of it right now. Please let me clock in. Or at the end of the shift, I'd clock out and I'd be walking out the door. I'd be like, can you take that trash out? Can I clock back in? No, sorry, I can't, right? Or, hey, Chris, sorry, I clocked out. I literally can't hear you anymore. Now these were not good characteristics in my heart, right? Some of you, if you're a boss, a manager, a small business owner, and you have employees who clock in, clock out, and they behave like that, I know what you think of them, right? They're not your favorite employees. You like the one who will always go the extra mile. You like the one who's willing to say, yeah, that's fine. Okay, I know, maybe I'm not technically getting paid right now, but I can do that one last little thing. So if we're going to transition from shepherd language to our language, what's Peter saying to us? Those who are called as elders, those who are shepherds over God's flock, they can't be clock punchers. Right, for me as a pastor, I can't tell you if you call me at 6 o'clock in the evening of like, hey, you know what? I have office hours and your crisis is going to have to wait. Right? I can't send out emails that say, will y'all please die between 9 and 5 Monday through Thursday? Like, can you only get married during my work day? Can you, like, there's just not it, right? And we talk with our pastors about that all the time of, hey, in one sense, we are always on call. We're always available. Now, if you don't feel called to a particular season or a particular place of leadership and that expectation is being placed on you, you don't like it at all. You start to feel burned out. You start to feel taken advantage of. Start to feel like you just kind of, they're just squeezing the life out of you. And so what's Peter telling us here? He's saying, hey, don't do it because you have to. Do it because you're willing. Do it because you want to. And so then we have to ask ourselves that question. If I'm in a position of leadership and responsibility in the local church, or really it can apply to almost any other area of life, and I find I'm only doing this because I have to, then I have to pray two prayers. My first prayer is, God, will you restore my passion and calling for this responsibility? And I've got to give him time and space to do that. But if it doesn't happen, then the second prayer is, Lord, I really sense you're leading me in a new direction, because no matter what I do, that passion, that calling is not coming back. And I know you haven't called me just to be a clock puncher and just to grind this out. So will you show me what's next? And what often happens is as you step out of that old calling that you no longer have a passion for, somebody else that is passionate is ready to slide right into it, and then God leads you into this new season. So as a leader, never do it just because you have to. Now, that doesn't mean that when you're walking in your calling and you're passionate about what you do, that you're going to whistle your way to work every day and just love every moment of it. Again, as a shepherd, there are going to be some long, cold nights. There's going to be some lonely moments. There's going to be some sheep that bite you. There's going to be some sheep that wander off. There's going to be some sheep that are hard-headed. There's going to be some sheep that knock you down. Right, so it's not like, well, I guess it's hard, so I must not be called to this. But it's, do I have that underlying passion and resolve of, I know God has placed me here? What Peter's telling us is you must serve, not because you have to, but because you want to, because you've been called to do it. Then the next thing he tells us is, don't do it pursuing dishonest gain, but be eager to serve. Right? Again, in our vernacular, we would say simply, don't be shady. Like, don't do this for the wrong reasons. It seems that some of these churches had arrived at the point where they were able to provide for their elders. So some of those local church leaders, this had in effect become their job. It looked similar to what our pastoral staff might look like today. And so Peter, he doesn't condemn that practice. Paul, in fact, in his letter, commends that churches who are able should provide for their leaders so they're able to more fully give themselves to the work God has called them to. But both Peter and Paul warn against the tendency to do it just for the paycheck. And I love the King James Version. Sometimes it's just slightly more descriptive. The NIV says, don't do it for dishonest gain. The King James says, don't serve filthy lucre. Which is just, I mean, I don't know the last time you used filthy lucre in a conversation. Probably, maybe some of you yesterday, I don't know. But for me, that's not a common one, but it paints this really graphic picture of, hey, I've got two reasons to serve. I can either serve because I'm paid to do it, or I can serve because God has called me, I'm willing, and I'm eager to do it. And if you serve for the wrong reasons, for dishonest gain, for filthy lucre, for the paycheck, for the acclaim, whatever it is, if you serve for the wrong reasons, you're going to get the wrong results in your soul. And you're going to harm those who are following you. So again, Peter's saying, hey, don't do it. He's warning the church from our conception of never look at church leadership as an easy way to make a buck. Never look at it as a way to build your own empire or increase your own comfort. He says, instead, do it because you are eager to serve. And so previously, he's told us, don't do it because you have to, do it because you're willing. And now he tells us, don't do it because you get paid, but do it because you're eager. This is a principle that we've taken at Christian Chapel and applied in some of our hiring practices. So generally at Christian Chapel, we will never hire a pastoral staff member or another ministry member who has not previously had an extensive background serving, volunteering in the local church. To put it very simply, we try not to pay somebody to do something they've never done for free. Now, that's not because we're trying to take advantage of people. That's not because we don't think that a worker is worth his wages. But it is because we think if you are really called to do this, then you're going to do it whether you're paid or not. And one of the ways that we evaluate God's calling on someone else's life is to say, well, if you've really been called, then you're going to be willing, you're going to be eager, and you have already found opportunities. And so if the first question is ever, hey, would you like to serve? And their response is, how much do I get paid? We generally know, like, God bless you. On to the next one. Right, we apply the same thing with our board of deacons. That's never the first space that someone serves at Christian Chapel. There's always a track record of service. Why? Because we want to see that you're not just doing this because you have to, that you're not just doing it because you get paid to, but you are willing and eager to exercise the callings and the giftings that God has placed on your life. And now some of you in the room, you are fortunate enough that God has enabled you to use your callings and giftings in a way that you earn your living from it. For many of our teachers, God has gifted you to teach, and you now have a job where you're paid to do what you love. And that's incredible. But what I also know about many of you is you don't restrict your teaching to the moments that you're getting paid. All right, I can ask your kids, and they will tell me, no, they are always ready to give a lecture about anything at any time. Doesn't matter if it's their field of expertise or not. You know, I know for me, if I wasn't the pastor of Christian Chapel, I would still find outlets to teach. I would teach a Wednesday night discipleship group. I would be teaching in any space that I could. And if I didn't have an outlet, my kids would get the full brunt of my desire to teach. Right? And so they're so thankful that I have these other outlets so they don't get 45-minute lectures every day on whatever I happen to have read or something. But, you know, we just have this thought, and this is what Peter's trying to help us understand is, hey, don't chase money. Greed's a terrible motivation. There's other ways to make a living. But if you're called to lead, if you're called to use your gifts, then be eager to use them. Search out opportunities for them. Don't wait for someone to ask you, but instead begin to seek out opportunities to use the gifts that God has given you. And then Peter tells us, don't chase power. He says, you're not lording it over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. When one of our kids, Angie and I were trying to think this morning and couldn't remember which one it was, but one of them, they were about 4 or 5 years old. And Angie was just doing some stuff with him one day. I mean, just normal mom life of when you have 4 and 5 year olds, you spend a lot of time telling them what to do, and you spend a lot of time telling them what not to do. I know in our case, our children are alive because of all the things we told them not to do, right? You can't jump off that. No, you can't go from the second floor onto the couch. That's not, no, you can't climb the roof to dunk. No, you can't, you know, all of these types of things. You can't do this, you can't do that. Well, there was one day Angie was just, just parenting. And one of our kids turned to her and they said, "Mom, I can't wait to have kids one day." And she said, "Why is that?" And they told her, "So I can have someone to tell what to do all the time." And we, you know, later we were talking about, like, we can't wait for you to have kids someday so that you have someone to tell what to do all the time. Because it's not actually as fun and freeing as you think it is. It's a lot of weight, a lot of responsibility. But we still carry this idea sometimes too, even into church leadership of, hey, you know what? If I could just be in charge, I think I could fix it. If I, you know what? Hey, Chris, I'll be a home group leader because there's some screwed up people here that I'd like to fix. And I just need a little bit of authority to do it. Hey, I'd love to be a chapel youth small group leader, and you go tell Pastor Cream, and he says great and brings you in, and you know, good, I can finally fix these brats. And finally tell that kid, like, stop wearing the jeans with the holes in them to church. Do you know what a button-up is? Do you know how to tuck your shirt in? Maybe you should, right? Or, hey, I'm going to go serve in chapel kids because I'm tired of those kids running around. They almost ran into me. I'm going to fix them. And we're just looking for, can I get a title that has some power, and then I can flex it. What Peter's trying to remind us of, there are no thrones in the pasture. You're a shepherd, right? You ever seen a shepherd walking around with a crown? Ever seen a shepherd with his loyal subjects who are all caring for the sheep while he oversees? No. Shepherds are there. They're down in the middle of it, not lording it over those that God has entrusted to you. Some of the unhealthiest churches in the world were started by people who just wanted to be in charge. And now what do they spend all their time doing? Fighting with other people who just want to be in charge. And so we have to model this leadership in the local church at every level where we have responsibility of, I'm not going to lord it over you, you're not going to lord it over me, but we are going to behave as those who've been entrusted with God's flock, and we're going to be examples to them. So when you understand that, hey, these sheep, whatever they are, they belong to God first, then you're going to humble yourself in your leadership. And then you're going to remember you've been called to be an example to them. Peter echoes the Apostle Paul's advice where he would tell the churches, follow me as I follow Christ. Again, we're remembering, yes, I've been entrusted with this small portion of God's flock, but it's not so I can build my own empire or kingdom. It's so that I can be an example for them of what it means to follow Jesus, even as those who have spiritual authority and responsibility over me are to be examples for me. And then the last thing Peter tells us is we're to remember our boss. In verse 4, he says, "And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that will never fade away." Jesus shepherds us as we shepherd others. And so Peter, again, is giving us just 2 short reminders. First of all, we do have a chief shepherd, and he is coming back. He is going to hold you accountable for the way you have exercised your spiritual authority and responsibility. He cares about how you treat those he's entrusted to you. But then there's also the positive of, hey, when he comes, you will receive a crown of glory that will never fade away. There's no thrones in the pasture, but there's a crown waiting for the faithful shepherd who says, hey, well done. You did it. You didn't give in to greed. You didn't do it just because you had to. You didn't do it in the pursuit of power, but you did it because you knew God had entrusted these people to you. He'd given you those children. He'd given you that classroom. He's given you that business. He's given you those coworkers. In every space where you have influence, you remember there is a chief shepherd over me. And in any space we lead, whether it's in church or outside of church, as Christian leaders, we bear some responsibility for the spiritual condition of those who follow us. God has not given you that influence solely to build the bottom line of the company or to get better test scores for the students. That is part of it. And you have to do that. But he also expects you to know them, to care about them, and to make it easier for them to find and follow Jesus. Earlier this week, I was looking through some old materials I had got at a church leadership conference back in 2013. And I went through, it was a collection of DVDs of all the different teachings from that weekend. There were about 12, 13 different teachers who had spoke. And there was one that I remember just really, it was in a pivotal time for Angie and I where we were trying to figure out God's plan and where he was leading us and if we were going to be at Christian Chapel long term or if he was going to lead us in another direction. And I remember so vividly, and I actually rewatched the message this week because this guy was just saying, God is calling you to go home. To plant your roots, to tell people, hey, I'm here. I'm going to be here. I'm not going anywhere. This is where God has planted me. And as I was watching that, it was just this flood of thankfulness and good memories of, man, I remember when God spoke. I remember how it settled my soul. I remember how it increased my commitment to what he's calling us to do. And then as I got that DVD out and I went to put it back in the case, I looked at the two or three other discs that were in there. And each one of them had a list of the men and women who spoke in each of those sessions. And as I saw that list of 12, my thankfulness turned to a little bit of sadness as I saw that three of those names, three men and women that God used in an incredible way on that weekend to speak directly to me, are now no longer walking with Jesus in the way they were at that moment. Due to addiction, due to alcoholism, due to adultery and affairs, they have forfeited their callings as shepherds. And it was just this kind of, on the one hand, Lord, thank you for showing me the potential we all have to minister to people we'll never know in ways that make an eternal difference in their lives. And on the other hand, a warning. Hey, with that responsibility comes the potential to inflict great pain on people we never know. See, one of the sad parts of leadership is sometimes we never actually know the reach of our influence until we mess up. And then you start to hear, oh, I hurt them. Oh, I hurt him. Oh, they cared. Oh, they were following. Oh, they were listening. Oh, they were watching. Oh, I harmed the cause of Christ here. I harmed the cause of Christ there. And so this is why Peter's reminding us, never forget, you have a chief shepherd and he will appear. And he's going to hold you accountable. And the only hope you have to steward the influence he's given you well is to lean into him every single day. Because our natural tendencies are to take what God has given us and begin to use it for our benefit. To chase our comfort, to chase our wealth, to chase our pleasure, to chase our leisure. And to think, I'll just do what I want and it's okay because I have so much stress and I have so much difficulty because of all this responsibility. But Peter's just telling us, hey, no. Listen, you have a chief shepherd. He is coming back and you have a reward that's going to be greater than any of the temptations you're facing right now. A crown of glory waits for you. Don't forfeit it for all the nonsense the world's throwing at you. Don't give it up. Don't harm those that God has entrusted. Don't harm yourself. Peter's reminder to us is, look, leadership is God's plan. It is part of the local church. It's going to be part of most of our lives in one capacity or another. And as leaders, we need to be led by Jesus every day. You never out-succeed your need to be led by him. He is my chief shepherd. He is your chief shepherd. And even though he's placed others over us in positions of authority and care, he is ultimately the one that leads us on right paths for his name's sake. He's the one who walks with us through the valley of the shadow of death. He's the one that sets a table for us in the presence of our enemies. He's the one who leads, guides, provides, comforts, corrects, does everything we need. We never outgrow our dependence on him. You can only lead to the limit that you follow Jesus. Right? And when you get to that space of you're leading without him, you're on dangerous ground. For you and those that follow you. So if you'll stand with me, I want to pray two final prayers for us this morning. The first is that you can't surrender to his leadership without a relationship with him. And then secondly, I want to pray for anyone who finds himself in a position of influence or leadership today. Will you bow your heads and close your eyes with me? If you're here, if you're watching online, if you're listening later, that the greatest decision you can make today is not an adjustment to your leadership model, but it's the surrender of your soul to Jesus. So if you've never done that, I want to invite you to make that commitment to him. If you're in person, in just a moment, you can go back to the prayer room and just tell those prayer team members, hey, I want to become a Christian. I want to start following Jesus. And they're going to pray a very simple prayer of repentance with you, and you're going to step into your role as a member of his flock. If you're watching online, you can do that at christianchapel.com/prayer. Just send us a message that says, I want to be a Christian. And we're going to reach out to you this week and give you some resources that you need to make that decision. But I want to pray, Lord, we come to you and you see those who are outside of your flock. They have not yet accepted your leadership and your authority. Today, Jesus, I pray that they would lay down their pride, they would lay down their sin, they would lay down their doubt, and they would receive your forgiveness and new life. Lord, we want to celebrate with them as they are welcomed into your kingdom. And now, Lord, I pray for all of us in the room who you have trusted with some form of influence of leadership. Lord, many of us, you've given spiritual authority and responsibility in this local church. You've given us spiritual authority and responsibility through other avenues and ministries in this community. And Lord, in all of those places, we need your spirit to come and empower us to be the men and women you have called us to be. Lord, if there are spaces where this morning your spirit is revealing that we have impure motives, we repent of those. Lord, forgive us for leading only because we have to. Forgive us for leading only for what's in it for us. Forgive us for leading in the pursuit of power and fame. God, forgive us for thinking that we are the chief shepherd in the spaces where we lead. Today, Lord, we come and we seek your forgiveness, and we also seek your life. Will you give us a willingness and eagerness to serve? Will you restore our passion and elevate the view of the calling you've placed on our lives? Will you show us, Lord, the eternal significance of our temporary leadership? Jesus, we surrender to you. We ask that in all our lives, your kingdom will come and your will be done. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Christian Chapel. For more information, visit us online at christianchapel.com.